Thousands of hostages have to wait another day to be freed in Gaza after an agreement was delayed at least a day. Reporter Linda Gradstein is in Jerusalem.
Israeli officials say they will not release the list of 50 women and children who Hamas is expected to free in exchange for a four-day ceasefire and Israel releasing 150 Palestinian prisoners. The delay hit many of the families who have been suffering since Hamas captured their loved ones on October 7th hard. Israeli officials say they expect the deal will go through and could begin Friday.
Even if there's a temporary ceasefire, humanitarian groups say more is needed. Dave DeCamp is news editor of antiwar.com.
It is good that there's at least some aid going to be let in and that the Palestinians on the ground are going to get some relief from these airstrikes, even just for a few days. But if you listen to what the aid groups are saying, you know, they're saying we don't need to let more aid in. We need to stop this.
The FBI says terrorism does not appear to be connected to a fiery car crash at the border crossing in Niagara Falls that killed two people. New York Governor Kathy Hochul describes the accident.
This vehicle basically incinerated. Nothing is left but the engine. The pieces are scattered over 13, 14 booths.
The balloons are inflated and ready to head south from Central Park in Manhattan for today's Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade that kicks off in about an hour and a half. These kids had their favorites as they watched the preparations last night.
The Minion.
The Minion's the best.
Minion, yeah.
My favorite was the Santa,
the Pokemon one.
My favorite balloon is Bluey.
Workers at Macy's stores in Washington state plan a three-day strike starting tomorrow on Black Friday, one of the busier shopping days of the year. CBS News correspondent Linda Kenyon reports.
They're planning the walkout, claiming unfair labor practices and the failure to reach a new contract deal between Macy's and the union. As one union member put it, the company cannot operate without its workers.
I don't think that they're going to be able to staff the stores properly, and if they can, it's going to be a mess.
Records show Macy's reported profits of over $1 billion in 2021 and 2022, while employees have been struggling under low wages and low staffing levels.
Only about 8% of Macy's full and part-time workers are represented by a union. Guns N' Roses star Axl Rose is facing a lawsuit filed by a former model who claims he sexually assaulted her.
Sheila Kennedy says the drugs and booze were flowing that night in 1989, and at some point she tried to leave. But according to her lawsuit, Rose dragged her like a caveman back into his suite and allegedly attacked her.
Monica Ricks reporting. This is CBS News.
Staples stores provide innovative products and services for small business, remote workers and learners, even teachers and parents. Explore more at your local Staples store.
From the home of the Cranberry Blossom Festival, your news, talk, and sports station is locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM.
The D3.
D3 right of the circle. Badgers take the lead.
The throwdown.
Down the lane and sends it in. And one.
The thrilling victory.
Badgers win it. Oh, did they dig in defensively tonight?
This is your radio home for Wisconsin Badger basketball.
Fakes the three. Sidesteps left for three in the lead. He hit it.
The Badger Sports Network from Learfield.
Drives the lane. Draw and kick. Right quarter. Three. Got it again.
Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. The opening weekend of Wisconsin's gun deer season was one of the safest on record. Only two people were injured by gunshots, and one of them accidentally shot themselves. Lieutenant Mike Weber heads the Department of Natural Resources hunter education efforts.
That reduction in incidents, I think, is obviously directly related to the work of the hunter education program, and then the people that go through the program really applying what they learned in the program.
92,000 deer were killed last weekend. That's 16% fewer than last year and 10% lower than the five-year average. Flags across Wisconsin are lowered to honor the victims of the Waukesha Christmas Parade attack, which happened 2 years ago today. A permanent memorial was dedicated in Waukesha yesterday. I'm Terry Bell, Civic Media News. Now, here's what you need to know closer to home.
I'm Terry Barr. A holiday tradition continues with an expanded schedule this weekend, including games on Black Friday. Football and Thanksgiving have been served up together for more than 140 years, the first featuring college teams Yale and Princeton. The NFL, National Football League, took over the holiday games in 1920. By the 1930s, Detroit became host to the yearly game, and the Packers kicked off one of the longest runs as a regular Lions opponent on Thanksgiving. A few games stand out, and some football experts point at the 1962 matchup. An undefeated Packers team lost in Detroit when the Lions beat Green Bay 26-14 after sacking quarterback Bart Starr 11 times. The Packers and Lions also hold the record for one of the holiday games with the highest score. Green Bay won this one in 1986, 44-40. For the Civic Media Radio Network, I'm Terry Barr.
Hello and welcome to a special marathon edition of The Kitchen's Open. This is our show within a show that happens every Monday during the 9 o'clock hour. The show is actually the brainchild of Beth Habhegger. You'll recognize her voice as she was a regular co-host on Monday mornings, and we still have her on when we can. We greatly appreciate the time Beth gave to the morning show, but her real job is pastor of the Moravian Church here in Wisconsin Rapids. I'm personally grateful to Beth, as this little show wouldn't have happened without her. What we have for you during this hour today on the morning show are three different segments that we recorded over the course of this last year. The first is an episode we did on May 22nd, 2023. It's on food safety and food regulations. Beth, James, and I look into the history of food safety that dates back to 323 BC, when a famous ruler may have died from food poisoning. We discuss the assize of bread that was one of the first food laws in England in 1202. We share a lot of interesting facts and information about the development of food safety regulations here in the U.S. between 1785 through the year 2020. We also discuss the differences between food additive regulations here and in the European Union. Towards the end of the segment, we share ways you can make deli meat at home and avoid the additives found in deli meat you can buy at the grocery store. So sit back, relax, and enjoy this segment of The Kitchen's Open.
You know what time it is.
Something good.
Well, welcome to The Kitchen's Open here on WFHR. We have fun talking about food in kitchens on Monday mornings, and today we're going to take a deep dive into food regulations and food safety.
That sounds important and possibly complicated. But before we dive into that, we need to thank our sponsor. The Kitchen is Open is sponsored by Chatterbox Catering, a full-service catering company equipped for all your catering needs.
All right, so we're going to get into this, food regulations and safety. I got interested in the topic when we were discussing the differences between food regulations in Europe and the U.S., and that led me down a path of the history of food safety. Now, we all learn at a fairly young age the importance of keeping food fresh. I don't know about you two, but I've had food poisoning more than once, and it's no fun at all.
No. You end up in the bathroom having things come out one end or the other.
Or both.
Yeah, and that's not fun.
No. So foodborne illnesses have a long history. Historians believe the first documented case dates back to 323 BC to Alexander the Great.
Wow.
Doctors and scholars think the ancient ruler may have died from typhoid fever caused by salmonella.
They didn't know that at the time, but the people who have studied these historical accounts of his symptoms and death figure that's what it was. Those indicate that Alexander the Great did indeed die of food poisoning.
That's fascinating.
Now, the first English food laws were believed to be the assize of bread and the assize of beer in 1202. They were proclaimed by King John of England. The laws regulated the weight, quality, or price of bread or beer in a community.
When a quarter of wheat is sold for 12 pence, then west or bread of a farthing shall weigh 6 pounds and 16 shillings. But bread crocket of a farthing of the same grain of the bottle shall weigh more than waste ale by 2 shillings. It goes on from there. But it gets even more confusing, especially the more cockney I go with it.
So what does that even mean?
So the laws assigned prices based on the weight and the quality of the bread.
Wastel and Simnel bread are of the highest quality, while Cockett bread is of a lower quality because it includes some of the Bultel, which is what is sifted away from the finest flour, probably bran. Mm. So people that spoke Cockney, James, probably bought Cockett bread because the lower price. The government stepped in to assure that the same money bought a fair product everywhere. Their money system was actually based on weight. Now, we're not going to get too deep into early English currency because it's really confusing.
Yes.
A pound was 20 shillings and a shilling was 12 pence. So a pound was equivalent to 240 pence, which weighed a pound. The British, they resisted decimalization until 1971. Talk about cultural tradition.
Yeah.
The American colonists enacted their own Aziz of bread in 1646. In those days, people knew where their food came from, so laws focused on prohibitioning adulteration or adding ingredients to food that reduced quality. The first original food safety law passed in 1785. It was called the Massachusetts Act Against Selling Unwholesome Provisions.
Mm-hmm. States regulated food quality within each state, and each had their own laws. It wasn't until 1862 that a nationwide food safety organization was formed when President Abraham Lincoln began the U.S. Department of Agriculture. He appointed chemist Charles M. Wetherill to lead the Division of Chemistry. That later became the Bureau of Chemistry in 1901. The name changed to the Food and Drug Administration in 1906.
But first, we have to jump back 1 year to 1905 and talk about the novel written by Upton Sinclair called The Jungle. He described in this novel in nauseating detail the filthy conditions in a Chicago meatpacking house. Ugh. His book caused a public uproar, and in response, President Theodore Roosevelt passed the Pure Food and Drug Act and the Federal Meat Inspection Act in 1906. So the Pure Food and Drug Act prevented the manufacturer's sale or transportation of adulterated or misbranded food, drugs, medicine, and liquors. And the Federal Meat Inspection Act prohibited the sale of adulterated or misbranded meat and meat products for food and ensured that meat and meat products were slaughtered and processed under sanitary conditions.
In 1938, the Pure Food and Drug Act was revised with new provisions added. It was renamed the Federal Food, Drug, and Cosmetics Act. The new provisions required safe tolerances to be set for unavoidable poisonous substances and products, as well as other standards.
20 years later, in 1958, the Federal Food, Drug, and Cosmetics Act of 1938 was amended again to include the Food Additive Amendment. This was because of consumer concerns about the impact of unknown chemicals in the food they consumed. Mm. The amendment ensured the safety of ingredients used in processed foods.
Now, it wasn't until the 1970s when the U.S. had the first major food recall. In 1973, more than 75 million cans of mushrooms were removed from store shelves after a nationwide outbreak of botulism.
Ugh. Several acts were put into place over the next couple of decades to test food quality and safety. In 1993, an outbreak of E. coli from a jack-in-the-box caused illness in over 700 people. Almost 200 ended up in the hospital, and 4 children died. Ugh. By 1996, the pathogen reduction, HACCP, systems landmark rule was issued. It focused on prevention and reduction of microbiological pathogens on raw products that cause illness.
In 2011, the Food Safety Monitorization Act, or FSMA, was signed into law. FSMA enables the FDA to focus on food safety preventative measures rather than being reactionary when an outbreak occurs. Mm.
And most recently, in 2020, the FDA released its blueprint for a new era of smarter food safety. Now, this newest effort hopes to reduce foodborne illnesses or lessen its burden. It focuses on traceability, digital technologies, and evolving food business models. As we learned during the COVID-19 pandemic, bacteria, viruses, and pathogens aren't always predictable.
Mm-hmm. So true. That is a really, really fascinating and interesting history on food regulations in the U.S. I think just in regulations in general, Melissa, I really, really can't thank you enough for doing the homework on this one, because I didn't know a lot of that. I think the audience is better suited knowing that so much, knowing so much of that. But what were you saying earlier about differences between here and in the EU?
Well, so both markets have consistently high food standards. And as you mentioned, you know, this is evolving and it's still evolving in both here and Europe. But the main differences between here and there are in food ingredient standards and labeling. So the U.S. takes more of a hands-off approach. Often food ingredients are allowed unless proven harmful. In Europe, they have the European Food Safety Authority, or EFSA, that enforces food regulations in all 27 member nations of the European Union. They require that additives be proven safe before they are approved for use in food. They've also banned the use of growth hormones and several chemical additives.
They also list their food additives differently on labels. They assign a 3- or 4-digit code to every food additive. The EFSA believes it's easier for consumers to memorize these codes than the full list of additives. In the U.S., each additive has to be printed out in full.
So there's 8 common ingredients that are banned in Europe but are allowed here. Now, according to the website tillydistribution.com, this is the list. And then I also referenced another list from wellwithray.com, and she listed out the potential harm that these can cause. So RBHG or RBST is a growth hormone. And according to Well With Ray, let me pull that one up here. RBST is a synthetic growth hormone used to increase milk production in cows. We've heard of this.
Mm-hmm.
It's associated with an increased risk of breast, colon, and prostate cancer in humans. Then there's, I'm going to slaughter these names, but bear with me here.
Welcome to my world.
Racoptamine. So they use this to increase lean muscle in animal stock. And the possible harm from this is it's a feed additive given to animals to promote leanness, and it's linked to heart problems in humans.
Mm.
Then we have potassium bromate. That makes baked goods whiter and increases volume. And the possible side effects, an oxidizing agent that gives dough its white color, and it's known as a nervous system disruptor.
Ooh.
And then there's brominate vegetable oil. This is used in a lot of sodas and beverages to keep flavors from separating. According to Well With Ray, it's also used as a flame retardant in plastics and furniture. It can build up in the body and potentially lead to memory loss, skin, and nervous problems.
Mm-hmm. Hmm.
Then we have, there's Elestra, that's a fat substitute. That is a cholesterol-free fat substitute that's known to irritate the digestive system. And it hinders the body's absorption of minerals A, D, E, and K.
Mm.
Then we have azodicarbonamide.
Ooh,
azodicarbonamide.
Nice job.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. It's used to bleach flour. And it's a known common allergen.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, we have the coloring agents, red number 40, yellow number 6, number 5, and blue number 1. We've heard a lot about these, and we know they're artificial colors and they're known carcinogens.
Mm-hmm.
And lastly, BHA and BHT, they're preservatives. And when they've been studied, they show long-term exposure to high doses is toxic in mice and rats, causing liver, thyroid, kidney problems, and affecting lung function and blood coagulation.
Wow.
So the banning of these ingredients and stricter food regulations mean common large companies sell different products overseas than they do here in the U.S. If you really want to take a deep dive on this, check out the website foodbabe.com. The author is named Vani Hari, and she has been investigating the food industry for years. She's built up what she calls the Food Babe Army.
All right.
God, that's a great name for a website.
It is.
That is so good. According to her website, with the help of the entire Food Babe Army, we have been able to force some multi-billion dollar food companies to change for the better, including Kraft, Chick-fil-A, Chipotle, Subway, General Mills, Panera Bread, Anheuser-Busch, and Starbucks. Our work has been featured on every major news network, and I'm now a New York Times bestselling author and was named one of the most influential people on the internet by Time Magazine. And it's very cool, and it is a really, really interesting website.
It is. And she is actually pretty much a babe. Mm. But her story is interesting, too, because that isn't why she got into it. She was going through a food crisis, a medical emergency, you know, like a medical crisis because of the issues that foods were causing to her body. So she went into it. Mm. Now, I didn't go too deep into her site yet. It was a little overwhelming to me, the amount of information she has there.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I could see myself getting a little freaked out about what I'm buying and eating. So I decided to focus small and start on an item that we eat almost every day, deli meat.
Mm.
Now, my boyfriend takes sandwiches to work every day, and many of us have heard about the concerns of nitrates in deli meat. Vanny goes into detail about trying to find out all of the ingredients in specific deli brands, and she was not able to get straight answers from the manufacturers.
Hmm.
So I thought I would look into what it would take to make it at home, and I was surprised at how easy it actually is.
Does that mean it's recipe time?
Yes.
Yay!
Yes, it is, Beth.
I found this incredibly easy recipe to make turkey deli meat at home. Hmm. It's from don'twastethecrumbs.com. All you need,
name.
I love that name. All you need is a whole boneless turkey breast. You season the outside however you want. You make homemade seasoning salt or use cracked pepper and salt, but the salt is important. The other seasonings can really be up to you. Preheat your oven to 350 degrees. Rub your seasonings all over the turkey and massage it in. Put the turkey breast in an 8x8 glass pan and drizzle it with about a teaspoon of olive oil per side. Roast it for about 90 minutes or until the temps are between 165, 170. Allow it to cool a bit and refrigerate it overnight. After it's completely chilled, it is much easier to cut. Mm-hmm. Use a serrated knife and cut thin slices. You can slice the whole thing all at once and freeze what you don't use within a week's time.
You can do essentially the same thing to make roast beef. The main difference is that you will want to start a day earlier so that you can rub the roast with salt and refrigerate it overnight first. The salt will act as a tenderizer as well as add flavor. Rinse it the next day and season it again with a little salt and pepper. Then you roast it at about 300 degrees until it reaches its internal temperature of 115 to 120. Again, you'll want to chill it completely after you try to slice it up. It might even help to throw it in the freezer for a couple of hours to par freeze it before slicing.
So everything I read, slicing is the most difficult part.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you want deli meats, you want it to be nice and thin. So mm-hmm. chilling it well, or even like you said, James, par freezing it really helps to get it firm enough to slice it thin.
Yeah.
So this one, to make deli or ham deli meat at home, it takes a little longer to prep. You'll need to brine it first with salt and sugar. For a 3 to 4 pound top round or bottom round ham, you'll need 2.5 teaspoons of salt and 1 tablespoon of brown sugar. So it's not really that much. You put the ham in a bowl and cover it with the water and your measured sugar and salt. Allow it to brine in the fridge for 3 to 4 days. Then you'll rinse off the brine and put it in a large pot and cover with fresh water. Simmer it until it reaches about 155 degrees inside. Or you can roast it in the oven at 250 to 300 degrees until it reaches an internal temp of 150. And again, you'll want to cool it before you slice it.
Wow, these all sound pretty easy to do. You'll have to let us know if they turn out if you try it at home.
Yes, for sure. I am going to try it, and I will give you a follow-up on this one.
Please do.
But for now, we need to wrap up this segment.
Aww.
We want to send out a big thank you to Chatterbox Catering for sponsoring our Kitchens Open segment.
If you have catering needs, contact Kathy at Chatterbox, and she will create the perfect menu for your party.
Whatever your catering needs, contact Kathy at 715-712-3393 and let Chatterbox Catering cook up something good. And with that, we'll close the kitchen.
Hmm. Another wonderful segment, another wonderful job, Melissa. Thank you so much. Both of you guys, great work on that one. That was fun. That was a lot of fun. Yeah.
The fastest hour in radio, serving truth, justice, and equality with every slice. Outside the Pizza Box with Pizza Mike. Friday nights at 7 on locally grown radio, 1320 AM and 97.5 FM WFHR.
Skilled trade workers are the backbone of every community and also the Army National Guard. Soldiers train to keep the power flowing, engines running, and in every other trade needed to accomplish the mission. These soldiers are on the fast track to learning skills that can set them up for success at home with companies looking to hire the best. Their resumes are being built through their paid training and part-time service. Find out how you too can learn a trade profession by visiting NationalGuard.com. Sponsored by the Wisconsin Army National Guard. Aired by the Wisconsin Broadcasters Association and this station.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio, WFHR. 34 today, under mainly sunny skies, northwesterly winds 10 to 15 miles per hour. Mainly clear, tonight 14. Tomorrow, highs around 30. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently, it's 31.
Welcome back to our Marathon Kitchens Open Hour here on WFHR. This next episode was recorded on November 14th of 2022. Beth and I delve into Thanksgiving options that aren't turkey. While that is the traditional option, there are some who don't enjoy it as much as the rest of us. After we go through some ideas for the main course, we dive into side dishes. We share favorite dishes by state and what we like ourselves. Finally, we cover desserts, because you just can't have a giant meal and not end it with something sweet. There are so many other options you can choose from, but the best thing about making a huge meal this time of year are all the people around your table. Whatever you choose to make today, we wish you a delicious and stress-free holiday. And now, here's Thanksgiving dishes from November 14th, 2022.
It is time for the kitchen to be open. Beth, Melissa, the floor is all yours.
All right. So we are just a week away from Thanksgiving. So obviously we need to talk about the nation's second favorite holiday and the foods that go with it. Mm-hmm. So turkey. Gobble. It's the natural first choice, but not everyone likes turkey, James.
Mm-hmm. I was just about to turn my microphone off. That got me. Nicely done.
Or maybe you just want to change it up and do something different this year.
Yeah, there are several options that you have. How about chicken instead of turkey? Do roasted chicken. It's a great alternative. It can be prepared in many ways. You can pretty much do with a chicken anything that you could do with a turkey. So you could roast it as a whole chicken, which is an interesting little challenge. You just don't cook it as long. But you could do things like maple butter and rosemary, or honey and lemon glazed roast chicken. Or just simply do the same thing that you would do with a turkey, with just some butter and salt and seasonings, and you're good. Maybe even deep fry it, like what you would do with a full deep fried turkey.
So, yeah, but if you're going to do that, make sure it is fully thawed out.
Yes, and patted down. No moisture.
Yes, no water.
None.
Another option would be something like a beef chuck eye roast with a paprika herb rub. Paprika is an underused spice, in my opinion. Somebody once told me that it is a great way to add flavor without heat if you have people who don't like spicy things.
Mm-hmm.
My experience with paprika is my mom only used to put it on mashed potatoes to make them look fancy. So I've not actually used paprika a whole lot, but it is a fun spice.
And you think of it more with like deviled eggs or egg salad than you would with something like this.
Mm-hmm. But it does, it's an interesting flavor. And if you find smoked if you can find smoked paprika, it is even more of a complex flavor. So a chuck eye roast would be a different alternative if you don't like turkey, but your pocketbook might not like it as much. Beef chuck roast averages about $5.99 per pound. And I heard that the price of turkeys just recently dropped significantly. I believe Walmart just dropped their price to 98 cents per pound.
Wow.
And that's down almost a dollar. Like 2 weeks ago, it was at 176 per pound. So they have definitely dropped in price, and a lot of grocery stores have locked in like previous year rates to help offset the cost, which is awesome.
Right.
Because food companies, guess what? They're not doing bad. In fact, a lot of them have made record profits in these last this last year. So it's good of them to do that.
Right. And turkey is our tradition, but beef is a good alternative.
It is. And if you do go with turkey, they might be a little bit smaller this year because of all the issues that we've been having with the avian flu. I know they've had to depopulate a lot of flocks across the nation. I want to say the last record or the last number I saw was like 6 million.
Wow.
But it is getting better because we're now in the season where that is not as prevalent.
Right. And there's always the option if you are a hunter to go out and try to find a wild turkey.
You could, but also make sure it's you get it tested for avian flu.
Yes. And if you can't do turkey or don't want to do turkey, pork is actually an interesting, different alternative. It can be done in many ways. Maybe you want to try a pork loin braised with mushrooms and wine or a spiced brown sugared ham. Because a lot of families will do ham instead of turkey. Do it with apples. You can even cook the ham in a slow cooker or, better yet, smoke it on the grill.
Or that you is could so
do
good.
Yeah, you could do what my family used to do growing up is use sausage, and we would have a traditional Pennsylvania Dutch meal called hogma, and you would use a good true Pennsylvania Dutchers would use the lining of a pig stomach as the cooking bag. You could get a regular cooking bag, a slow cooker bag. I have started to deconstruct it, so I don't do it in the bag anyway, but you chop up some potatoes, you use cabbage, you use unseasoned sausage, and you season it yourself with just salt and marjoram, and you cook it all together in the bag. Or what I do is I brown up the sausage, add the cabbage so it gets that flavor, and then I do my potatoes separately. But it's a wonderful alternative, and that's what we used to do for our Easter meals instead of doing a traditional big meal. But it was always one of the things that we had on the table at Thanksgiving as well.
Nice. Way to keep those family traditions going.
Yeah.
So if you want to go crazy fancy this year instead of any of these traditional options, you could whip up some buttermilk marinated quail with herbed Rita and blood oranges.
Wow.
Does that sound too fancy?
A little bit.
I had to look up what Rita is.
Yeah.
Because it's spelled R-A-I-T-A. Mm-hmm. It's actually an Indian yogurt.
Ooh.
So it's basically just yogurt with savory spices in it. Wow. So fresh herbs
decadent.
And salt and pepper. Yeah, yeah, it really does. But that's, you know, something probably a little more fancy than most of us would want to do. But you could go with roasted lamb chops or grilled salmon. Those sound fancy, but they aren't that difficult to do. Or so I've heard. I've never actually made lamb. But I have made beef Wellington.
Ooh.
And while it's crazy fancy and super involved, it is so delicious. Yes. I have never made anything that tasted as good as a classic beef Wellington.
Oh, my mouth is watering.
If you've never had it, it's a beef fillet. You sear it and you smother it in Dijon mustard, wrap it in minced mushrooms, garlic, and shallots. Then you roll it in prosciutto and encase it in a puff pastry. And then you bake it.
Oh,
so good.
Yes. My stomach's starting to growl, Melissa.
I was telling my boyfriend about this, and when I was prepping for this segment, he's like, maybe we should make that for our Christmas party. I'm like, oh, okay, sure, let's do it. So I think that's actually what we're going to make it on the grill, believe it or not.
Wow.
Yeah,
very nice.
So that'll be a fun adventure for the Christmas party.
Yeah. And all of these sound like wonderful main courses to have for the meal, but the meal isn't just the main course, is it? Let's start talking about some side dishes.
Okay.
Everyone has their favorite, but did you know that they did a study of what is the most popular by state? And I think that was actually one of the questions that we've had for the turkey qualifying. So we know that Wisconsin is mashed potatoes. But Zippia published this study and on a bunch of its websites. So they used Google Trends data from November of 2019 to see which states Googled recipes for these the most.
So I don't know if these are actually what's most popular by state or if it's just what people don't know how to make in these states.
Good point.
They were Googling recipes, I don't know. That's just a thought I had when I was
That's
doing...
a great thought. No, that's a great thought. I'm sorry to interject, but that, I hadn't thought of that way. That is a really good thought, Melissa.
Okay, but wait until you hear what some of these things are that people had to Google recipes for. Okay, so obviously mashed potatoes came out on top with over 10 states claiming that as their favorite, including, as Beth said, Wisconsin. But there were lots of casseroles. Green bean took top rank with 7 states, sweet potato casserole in 2, broccoli casserole, and hash brown casserole in 1. And then mac and cheese was popular in 7 states entirely on the East Coast. Nobody else likes mac and cheese at Thanksgiving, apparently, in any other part of the country.
Interesting.
Stuffing and dressing in 7 states, cornbread dressing in Louisiana, which I would really like to try.
Yes.
Never had that. So some of the outliers were 4 states liked rolls. These sides were popular in 1 state each. Biscuits, crescent rolls, baked sweet potatoes, side salad, cranberry sauce, Vermont, by the way, cream corn, just plain old corn, favorite white gravy. These kind of got me. Turkey gravy. And the best one, deviled eggs.
There you go with the paprika.
Yep, there it is.
Now let's look at some of the more regional side dishes, because each area can tend to have their own specialty side dishes. So how about wild mushroom stuffing?
Ooh.
Yeah, doesn't that sound yummy? That's popular in the Pacific Northwest, and it's made with eggs, bread, hazelnut, fresh herbs, and a variety of mushrooms.
Yum.
Folks in Minnesota, and my husband can probably tell you some stories about this, make a similar dish, but it's with wild rice, sausage, water chestnuts, and sliced mushrooms, and they call it wild rice dressing.
I would eat that.
It's to die for. It is yummy. And actually, there are some restaurants in Minnesota that will still sell that throughout the year, so you need to go find those restaurants. Yes. In Texas, they might serve mashed jalapeno cilantro sweet potatoes. And down south, they enjoy smoky poblano corn pudding. Maple syrup cranberries. Doesn't that sound to die for? I think we've said about 3 things that are on James's top radar.
Just writing these down. If you could slow down, actually, a little bit.
Maple syrup cranberries are from New England, and they sound delightful with brandy, brown sugar, and a dash of lemon juice. Sweet and tart. Best of both worlds.
Yum. Those all sound delicious, and nothing I have ever had at Thanksgiving, but maybe we got to try some new recipes. Well, we can't not talk about Thanksgiving and talk about desserts.
Yes.
So they're paramount when it comes to these giant family meals, but what can you serve besides pie?
Of
course, that is the go-to favorite, but if you're like me, making pie crust has ended in so many failures over the years, and Pillsbury really shouldn't always take the credit.
Right.
Well, so let's look at some other options.
Well, how about pumpkin chocolate chip bread with fresh grated ginger? Doesn't that sound yummy? Yeah.
Or I think James might be into this, pumpkin cheesecake bars with a ginger snap crust.
Yeah. Chocolate hazelnut and caramel tarts.
Just Google that. And then look at the decadent deliciousness in front of you.
Yes.
Tell me you're not hungry. Apple pear crisp with peanut butter.
Yeah.
That one sounds a little on the healthier side.
Yep. Or a cranberry cobbler.
If you don't like cranberries on the table, maybe you'd like them for dessert.
And if you can always add a little bit of apples, cranberry and apples pair really well together.
Oh, yeah. And then, of course, you can't go wrong with a pecan pie brownie. Picture brownie, pecan pie, mash them together.
Yum.
So delicious.
Yes.
Like, I have to make those. My mom used to make pecan tarts for her neighbor across the road when he'd help her out with stuff because they were his favorite. And, you know the little mini ones?
Yeah.
So they're like tiny, tiny little mini pies you can eat in one bite. That on top of a brownie.
Oh, my gosh.
That sounds amazing.
Hello. Yeah. I'm coming to your house if you're making those.
All right. I'll send you my address. So those are some other options if you don't necessarily want to make your traditional Thanksgiving spread, which whatever you make is going to be delicious.
Right.
So just enjoy the holiday. Enjoy time with family. And I think with that, we'll close the kitchen.
Absolutely.
Another wonderful episode, you two. Thank you so much. Great work. That was very fun. And we're all a little smarter and a little hungrier. A little bit. Thank you both. Great. Nice work.
Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Wisconsin officials are confirming the latest case of bird flu in the state. The Department of Agriculture says more than 51,000 chickens at a poultry farm in Trempealeau County were euthanized to try to contain the virus. Five birds were infected in a backyard flock in Taylor County earlier this year. Good government groups are urging the public to pay attention to how the Wisconsin Supreme Court rules on a lawsuit challenging the state's legislative maps. Justices heard oral arguments yesterday. Nick Ramos is with the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign.
If we're throwing out the maps and drawing new maps, then it sounds like everybody is going to be up for election.
Assembly district borders have to be in place by March 15th for next November's elections. I'm Terry Bell, Civic Media News. Now here's what you need to know closer to home.
Locally grown radio, WFHR programming, is broadcast from the Bug Tussle Studios. Bug Tussle, keeping you connected to the world around you.
The simple act of sharing gratitude is how Thanksgiving is described in the dictionary. But did you know the first official national holiday happened in 1789? It was declared by President George Washington following the creation of the new U.S. Constitution. Today, Thanksgiving means gratefulness for the harvest, your family, or a higher power. However you celebrate, all of us with your local Civic Media radio station wish you a wonderful holiday season. I'm Terry Barr.
When you're high, you feel different. You think different, you talk different, you draw different, you listen to music different, but you probably knew that. Problem is, you also drive different, and not in a good way. That's why driving high is illegal everywhere. So if you're high, just don't drive. Make a plan to get a sober ride. Because if you feel different, you drive different. Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
News, talk, and sports on both sides of the dial from Wisconsin Rapids and beyond. Locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM.
A new head coach.
We got one objective and one goal is to play for a championship.
A talented backfield.
Braylon Allen does it again.
And a defense that just...
Down he goes.
Won't.
Intercepted. He's gone.
Stop.
Another turnover forced.
Join us Saturday. Wisconsin travels to Minneapolis to battle for the Axe. Our coverage begins at 12:30 on your home for Wisconsin football. The Badger Sports Network from Learfield on Wisconsin.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio, WFHR. 34 today, under mainly sunny skies, northwesterly winds 10 to 15 miles per hour. Mainly clear, tonight 14. Tomorrow, highs around 30. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently, it's 31.
Welcome back. This final episode is one I hope you won't need today because I'm sure your Thanksgiving dinner will be absolutely perfect. But if you lost track of time and something got a little overcooked, perhaps this is the segment for you. Beth and I did this segment of The Kitchens Open on January 30th of 2023. This one deals with what to do if you overcooked something. We begin by talking about potatoes. That's likely one of your side dishes today. We cover several tips on what you can do if you overcook them. They can be saved and still come out tasting great. Next, we talk about rice. That may or may not be on your menu, but it's a staple in many households. We discuss the many ways you can cook rice to get it to come out just right. But if that still doesn't help, we cover a variety of options on what to do if your rice turns out sticky. We even give you ideas on ways to repurpose overcooked rice. And lastly, we talk about what to do if your meat gets cooked. I mean overcooked. I honestly wish you nothing but a delicious meal today and hope everything you worked so hard to prepare is delicious and tasty. But these are excellent ideas on what to do if your meat turns out a little bit on the dry side or even ways you can jazz it up as leftovers. Thank you for joining us today on this special marathon edition of The Kitchens Open. Join us again tomorrow for another in the 8 o'clock hour with Seth, James, and I, where we cover topics that will help you with leftovers, leftover containers, and Seth waxing poetic about pie. For now, enjoy this January 30th edition of The Kitchen's Open.
I'm going to move out of the way and let the kitchen get open.
Yeah, all right. Today is Monday, January 30th. And I don't know about you, but life is busy. We're constantly juggling tasks and trying to get everything done at once. This happens at work, at home, and even in the kitchen. So what happens when you overcook something because you got distracted or pulled away from your task? Can it be fixed? Well, maybe if it's not pie, as we discussed in last week's segment.
Yeah.
But let's look at some of the common foods we make and see how they can be salvaged if you overcook them.
So you don't just have to pick up the phone and call for order.
Yeah, because in some places you can't do that.
Exactly.
Like here. So let's start with potatoes. Now, this is the whole reason I did this segment is because I overcooked some baby reds when I was making a roast last week. Neither my boyfriend or I were home all day, so we had little choice but to put them in when we started the chicken in the morning. And they cooked in water for at least 12 hours or so.
Wow.
They were edible with the chicken dinner, but reheating them didn't sound like a delicious option. So here's a few alternatives.
Yeah, the first and the probably best option, if you simply overboiled your potatoes, while simple, it does require some attention. So first, you have to drain the water and then put your potatoes back in the pot. Put them back on the stove over medium heat and stir them almost constantly. You'll hear the sizzle of the water evaporating as the potatoes start to heat, so that's okay. Keep it up until you don't see water at the bottom of the pan anymore, and your potatoes will be almost mashed by this point. So then you just need to lower the heat and add a little bit more butter or cream or milk and finish mashing them as you desire. You may need to lower the heat as the process goes on so that you don't scorch them. So be mindful of where you are with that temperature as well.
Yeah, that's why it requires a little more attention.
Mm-hmm.
Another option is turning them into something else. I used mine to make curry. But they could also be used to make a delicious potato salad.
Yeah.
So when you overcook potatoes, they release a lot of starch.
Mm-hmm.
This makes the potatoes gluey.
Yeah.
But it can cause, when you make a potato salad, it can cause the salad dressing to cling to the potatoes and the other ingredients really well. Mm-hmm. In my curry, the starch thickened my sauce really nicely and added the flavor of the roast that was completely infused into the potatoes. It added to the dish.
Good.
I did have to add an excessive amount of curry paste to match the roast chicken flavor so that it tasted like curry.
Right.
Not just, you know, like chicken broth. Yeah. But that was all right. It was just enough spice to make your nose run.
Right. And it's that starch that causes that foaming at the top of the water that mm-hmm. sometimes runs over the pot. So that's why you see that when you're boiling your potatoes. Another option is to put your overcooked potatoes into quarters on baking sheets in a hot oven. You can use a little bit of oil, but don't use too much or the evaporating water will cause it to splash. As the water starts to evaporate, the outsides of the potatoes are going to start to get a bit crisp. So you can pull them out and finish preparing your recipe as desired. Or you can add seasonings or cheese and finish them under a broiler and you've got wonderful crispy wedges.
Yum, because they'll still be soft and perfect on the inside.
Mm-hmm. And that nice crispy crunch on the outside. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Another food that we eat a lot of is rice. Now, if you're cooking your rice in a rice cooker, the process practically takes care of itself, as long as you measured right. But for those of us who don't have a specialized kitchen implement for cooking rice, a kettle with a lid and the stove can work perfectly fine. But what about when it doesn't?
Okay, well, first let's talk about the different ways that you can cook rice, because there are so many ways that you can do it. The bag just says to add 1 cup of rice to 1.5 cups of water, bring to a boil in a saucepan, and simmer with the lid on for 15 minutes or until the water is gone. The rice cooker method is very straightforward as well. You simply measure your rice with the provided measuring cup and fill the pot to the same number of scoops, 1:1, so it's an equal ratio. Mm-hmm. Depending on the type of rice that you have, this method should work just fine. Did you know that you can cook rice like pasta?
Actually, I didn't.
It's amazing. You just fill a large pot with water, you add your rice, and cook for about 8 to 10 minutes or until it's slightly underdone, and then you drain the rice and return it to the pot, covering it to let it stand for another about 5 to 10 minutes so the rest of the moisture gets absorbed. You can also, their silicone cooking steamers work really well, and you can do your rice in the microwave then.
Aha. Yeah, there are so many ways to cook rice. You can also bake it in the oven.
Nessie?
Use a 2-quart baking dish. Combine 1 cup of rice to 1¾ cup boiling water. It's important that it be boiling.
Okay.
And then 2 tablespoons of butter and 1 teaspoon of salt. Cover it tightly and bake at 375 for 22 to 27 minutes. If you have an instant pot, you can also make rice in there. This calls for a 1-to-1 ratio of rice to water. Lock the lid, set it to high pressure for 10 minutes. You'll use the natural release method before removing the lid and fluffing the rice.
Mm.
Now, as Beth already mentioned, the last option we're going to talk about is the microwave.
Yeah.
This is actually the way my mom always made rice. And
really?
We often had rice for breakfast. Yeah. We would have rice instead of like hot cereal or oatmeal.
Okay.
But you make it like you would that. Add butter and sugar, cinnamon and salt. It's actually a really good breakfast.
Mm.
So you need a large bowl. And obviously a large microwave. Follow the directions on your rice package for the ratio of water to rice and add 2 additional tablespoons of water. You put it in the microwave and cover it with a cotton dish towel or paper towel. Stir it after 10 minutes and microwave for an additional 10 to 15 minutes or until the water is gone. Now there's a lot of specifics on the internet when I looked this up about, you know, the first time you do it on high for 10 minutes, the second round of microwaving, you lower your power level to like 50% or something like that. My mom never did any of that. And she never put a towel over it either. She would just mix the rice in the water, throw it in there. The only downside to not using the towel is that sometimes the top layer would get a little dried out.
Okay.
Especially if she overcooked it, which, you know, happens in the morning when you're busy and you've got 4 kids, you're trying to get ready for school. But if you add enough butter, sugar, and milk to it, it doesn't even matter.
There you go. And now, I mean, that was a generation ago, and now we do have these silicone steamers that you can put a lid on it and it vents it for you, and then you don't have to worry about the top layer being crispier than the bottom layer.
Yeah.
So what if one of these methods, you've tried this and you still fail, which can happen a lot?
Oh, yes, with any one of these
anything.
Methods.
Your rice turns out to be overcooked and starchy. Okay, what do you do then? If it's only a little sticky, you can dump it into a colander, rinse it under some cool water, and then spread it out on a baking sheet and reheat at 350 degree oven for about 5 minutes or so. It's, again, something you're going to want to keep your eye on to check it along the way until it gets to the texture you want. That could take a little less time. It could take more time. So keep an eye on it. You can also do this on the stovetop in a kettle. Just stir as you go and cook off some of that moisture that was left in there. Just watch so it doesn't scorch again. If you're going to do stovetop, you really need to be at the stove. Another option, if the rice is done, but there's still water in the pot, you can put a piece of stale bread on top of the rice. Cover the pot and allow it to continue to cook on low heat. And then in a few minutes, the bread should have absorbed the excess moisture, and that's where the stickiness will be, and the rice should be fine.
Yeah. Now, this does require you to have a piece of stale bread laying around, but, I mean, that happens.
Yeah. Well, if it's the bread that you used in your storing of your cookies, to take the, you know, let the cookies take the moisture, then you use that bread, and now put it on the rice.
There you go. So alternately, there's lots of ways that you can repurpose overcooked rice.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, some recipes specifically call for overcooked or sticky rice. Now, soup is the obvious easy fix because, as is fried rice.
Right.
But you could also make fried rice cakes.
Ooh.
So form the mushy rice into patties, like a hamburger, about 1/2 inch thick. Salt and pepper both sides and fry them in a little bit of olive oil over medium heat for 2 to 3 minutes on each side. You'll have a rice patty that's crispy on the outside and creamy on the inside.
Mm.
And it works great as a platform for proteins and veggies. You can also do a similar thing but make them thinner and add other ingredients like you would for a potato pancake. Cheese or green onions or even garlic would work great for this.
Ooh, so it sounds like it's a savory option, but I bet you could make it sweeter too and add some cinnamon and sugar.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Yum.
And then a dollop of ice cream on the top.
Oh.
So maybe some chocolate or caramel syrup.
Yeah.
Dessert.
Some people might intentionally now start to overcook the rice. And if you do, and that's not something that sounds good, how about meatballs? Because meatballs are another great food to add overcooked rice to. It adds to the filler, but it won't sacrifice the flavor. Overcooked rice works great as baby food as well. Think about the consistency that you usually have. So it's easier for them to eat than regular rice that has a bit more of a denseness
texture.
To it. So because they don't need to chew it as much. If it's overcooked, it's already soft. It's easier for their gums to use. You can serve it as is, or you can mix in pureed vegetables and fruits. So there's a little bit more flavor because plain rice doesn't necessarily have a lot of flavor to it. So add what you can to kind of add the flavor that you want. And of course,
and that add more nutrients too.
Exactly. You know, you mix it with some pureed carrots or something like that, and it adds a little bit of sweetness. Just add milk. You can also make it into pudding.
Yeah.
Rice pudding can be excellent. And again, with that, you just add the milk, cinnamon, sugar, raisins, vanilla extract, and then you mix well and serve warm.
My mom used to make rice pudding all the time. It was one of our favorite treats. And she, well, I shouldn't say she made it all the time. It was a treat now and then that she would make for us. But it would take so long to cook, and we get so impatient. But if you start with already cooked rice,
right,
it's ready, like, instantly.
Wow. And that's not something that I was used to growing up, because I always think rice, ooh, bland. But if you think about the things that you're adding in and it's sweetening it up, oh, it sounds wonderful.
And you can really go crazy with the different kinds of fruit that you put in there. If you're not a raisin fan, what about dried blueberries?
Yeah.
Or dried cherries?
Cranberries in this area? Dried cranberries?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
For sure. So now let's move on to what if you overcooked your meat? Well, you can't really save it in any of the ways we've talked about saving an overcooked starch or carb.
Right.
Tasty meat is a combination of protein, fat, and liquid. When you've overcooked it, all you're left with is the protein, and the fat and the liquid is basically gone. So here's a couple of ways that you can save overcooked meat.
Yeah, the easiest option is to chop up the overcooked meat and mix it with fat and flavor. So if you have a food processor, throw the meat in there and add some maybe olive oil and puree it. Then you can use it as a stuffing in things like hand pies and empanadas to dumplings and ravioli. You can also use a little bit of the cooking liquid to add flavor when you mix it.
I actually did this yesterday. I made dumplings for dinner, and we had some leftover stuff from our meal we ate out on Saturday night, and it was actually duck livers with mushrooms, and it was an appetizer, but there was so much of it. It was like, we cannot possibly eat all of this, so I chopped it up real fine and mixed it with some more mushrooms and cabbage.
Ooh.
And made it as a stuffing to put into dumplings. It turned out really good.
Yum. I'm coming to your house when you have leftovers.
So another thing that you can do with overcooked meat is to deep fry it. This will turn your overcooked brisket into something very bacon-like.
Ooh.
Now,
who doesn't like bacon?
Right? Most people do. For overdone chicken, you can shred it really fine and mix it with mayonnaise to make a chicken salad.
Yes.
Because that's going to give it the moisture that you need and just add flavor.
Yeah. So one website did say, though, that the worst thing you can do if you've got overcooked meat is to just add water. So don't think you're going to save a dried out roast by throwing it into broth and making it in soup. But you can try to immediately simmer it in a little broth and add just a little bit of vinegar or lemon juice, because the acidity in there helps to tenderize the meat so that it doesn't feel so dry in your mouth. Alternately, if your roast turns out tough, putting it in an Instapot for about 20 minutes will turn it to fork tender. The liquid and the pressure of the, and the pressure kind of helps soften that connective tissue that makes it tough. So it's in the muscle fibers, and it because it's tenderized, it just makes it fall apart.
Yeah. We had to do this actually not too long ago. We cooked a roast, and it was on high for like 6 hours, but it was still tough. So my boyfriend throws it in the Instapot. 20 minutes later, it was like it had, you know, cooked for 12 hours on low heat. It was perfect.
But you have to have an Instapot to make that happen. So some of these other alternatives may be the better option for you. Mm-hmm. And we're not done. There's still another alternative.
So the last thing is sauce is your friend. Mm-hmm. Barbecue, A1, even sweet sauces like sweet chili or plum sauce can help when you've overcooked the meat.
Mm-hmm.
Remember that the saltiness and the meatiness of the food will be pronounced when it gets tough and dry, so sweetness and acidity will pair better with it than adding more salt.
So think sweet and sour kind of things together, so that saltiness and sweetness, just the salt will bring out the flavor of the sweet.
Yep. And let's be real. We all like sauces.
Yes.
I mean, most of us do. I do. I dip. When we have tartar sauce, I probably eat more tartar sauce than I do fish.
Sauces can be your best friend.
They are. They're delicious. And it can definitely help if you've overcooked the meat. Mm-hmm. But if you can repurpose it in another way, you know, sometimes that's the better option.
Right. And don't be afraid. I mean, if you get into the kitchen and things happen, you know, our attention gets taken away, there are always options. And don't be afraid to go to the internet or come back and listen to this podcast and see what you can do with what you've overcooked.
Yeah. And if you have questions, let us know.
Yeah.
Send us an email. melissa.k@civicmedia.us. We'd love to hear your feedback on the show. And if there's a topic that you'd like to hear, drop us a line. Let us know.
Absolutely. We'd love to cover them for you.
Mm-hmm. Well, with that, I think we'll close the kitchen.
That is a good one. That was a really, really good one, you guys.
WFHR, Wisconsin Rapids, 1320 AM, and W248DE, broadcasting at 97.5 FM.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Wendy Gillette. A temporary ceasefire in the Israel-Hamas war and the release of dozens of more hostages was delayed at least another day. Our team covered